This afternoon, I'm talking with Eleanor Tripp, who lives in the Handy House here in Westport, just west of the beautiful East Branch of the Westport River. The house she now lives in is a New England landmark, as well as a Westport landmark. I'm Mary Giles, a neighbor and friend of Eleanor's. Over a year ago, Eleanor gave me the opportunity to make a beautiful tape about her life and work in this house with her husband and since his death. Through near tragic circumstances, that tape has been lost, and Eleanor has been generous enough to give me the opportunity to make another tape of her. Her love for Westport, as well as her love for this old house, lies behind this willingness. Thank you very much, Eleanor, for letting me come this afternoon. And now, may I begin to ask some of the questions I'd like to ask about it and some of the questions that most of the people in Westport would love to know. How did you happen to buy this house, you and your husband?
Well, Louis and his first wife, Florence, were just riding around Westport, and they had in mind buying a boat. And when they came by down Handy Hill, they saw a sign on the front of the fence here and at the corner, and it said, "House for sale, get the key at Mike Coughlin's." He lived across the road. And when they saw all the beautiful fireplaces, the house, of course, was empty, but when they saw all the beautiful fireplaces and the woodwork and all the beautiful construction, they decided to buy the house instead.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in September, where they bought the house, September 1936, and decided to use it for vacations until they retired.
Yes. And then how long was it before they retired?
Louis retired in 1948.
And in the meantime, she had died, and
yes.
and you had married Louis,
yes.
and were living in Washington with him, and so that when he retired to Westport, you and he came up
to
this house together.
Came up on our honeymoon in 1941,
mm-hmm.
and spent a month here. And the first thing we had to do, of course, at that time we were at war.
Yes.
And no lawnmowers.
No.
Were available or anything, so we were using sickles to
yes.
hack down the grass.
I suppose it was terribly long, and
yes,
it's just great. It's just been empty so long, and you had a lot of hard work. How old were you, Elmer, then? Or don't you mind to talk about your
no.
age?
Ooh, I think
no.
that's a secret.
But anyway,
it was hard work
thing,
anyway.
Yes.
And you are a worker.
The first thing we did was to take wallpaper off
mm-hmm.
and patch cracks and things of that type to get ready for when we, well, we hadn't, at that time, we hadn't planned any special retirement, but just to make it
pleasant
start,
to live in for
start
a
patching.
Vacation.
Mm-hmm. And the windows, hardly any of the windows had much putty left. So that was the big project.
Mm-hmm.
We have
and
35
And that's the hardest
windows.
Thing of all to do is to putty a window. Don't you
putty
think it paint. Is?
Yes.
I just think
that
it's really terribly difficult.
That was one of the first
mm-hmm.
projects that, mm-hmm. that we had.
And you worked together always on it, and that's what
yes.
made it fun, I suppose.
Yes.
Did you both feel the same way about it? Were you thrilled to death with this beautiful paneling?
Just
and
fell for the whole setup right off the bat, even
mm-hmm.
though I was a Washingtonian, wasn't used to the country, and had just a tiny garden there.
Mm-hmm.
So planting and growing things was all new to me.
Did you and Louis, when you came on vacations, try to have a garden at
yes,
first?
Yes, right away.
Right away.
Mm-hmm. And Harry Kirby, old Harry Kirby, young Harry Kirby, still living down on Drift Road, but his father was one of the few people that Louis remembered as a boy. And he came down with his horse and wagon and did our plowing.
Henry came to do our plowing.
Yes, he was an old friend of Lewis's. And he'd use a horse and the old tight plow.
How big was your garden?
Well, about the size we have now. Only really? We had two gardens. Oh, then really? We had corn and tomatoes in one area that took up a lot of room. Mm-hmm. And then our regular small garden, or another garden for the smaller things, mm-hmm. in another area. So we really had two gardens.
You really went to town with it.
Yes, yes. And canned things and brought them, took them back to Washington with us. Uh-huh. And so on.
How long a vacation did you have?
Just a month that. And then really? The rest of the time, because Lewis was too busy in Washington, I would come up
mm-hmm.
by train.
And do your canning
just,
and so
just,
on.
No, we did, no? I did, couldn't do any of that then.
Oh.
Because we were just here for a short period. Just came to see how the house was and everything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, after Lewis bought the house, he had, the roof had dormers. And a great big porch on the front, and he wanted to restore it to mm-hmm. the original house. And they had a picture in the old darkness showing the way it should look.
Mm-hmm.
And so Charles T. Gifford, down on the Horseneck Road, Lewis didn't know him, but Mike Coughlin recommended him.
Now where is Mike, did Mike Coughlin live?
He lived right across the road, and his job was house painting mm-hmm. and papering.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he used to be a caretaker here when Abbott Smith owned it. And he was
Abbott
Smith.
Could we pause just a moment and find out? I think now's the time to even say something about who owned it first and how many different people have owned it before we get into the work you did. Who owned the land first? Do you know?
George Cadman.
George Cadman
was the one that had it when the house was built on it. There was others that had it earlier,
mm-hmm.
before George Cadman. I think he came.
When do you think it was built?
The first part was built in 1714.
The earliest part. Which part was it? The east or the west?
The east.
The east end was built in 1714.
Yes. And I have seen a sketch of the original house,
mm-hmm.
and it was up to the first door on the east side, and then that was the middle part. We don't have the exact date, but it was definitely built, added to
mm-hmm.
after 1720,
mm-hmm.
but it could be anywhere from 1720 up to 1790.
Mm-hmm.
And we think,
in other words, it might be revolutionary times when the second part was built.
Yes. And that
what about the last part? Have you any idea when
that,
the third part?
The middle part.
The west wing?
Built by one of the whites.
Oh, one of the whites, tell me about this.
Yes.
It was built by a white, the middle part.
Elizabeth was George Cadman's only daughter.
Elizabeth White?
Elizabeth White. And she was Elizabeth Cadman, but she married a white, William mm-hmm. White. And then George Cadman was very wealthy, and he gave her the house
mm-hmm.
and the land. And then after they died, it was inherited by Jonathan White.
Their son?
Their son.
Mm-hmm.
They had a son, a William also, but they had a son, William. And then it was inherited by Jonathan White.
Who was William's son?
After William.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jonathan White to Humphrey White. And that was in 1794. And it was Humphrey who sold it to Eli Handy.
Oh.
And he built this west third.
Oh, he's the one who built the west wing.
In
this beautiful
1821
west wing.
Is when he built this
inn. It's so beautiful. Should we take time now to talk about Dr. Handy? His experiences, his life and his work here have meant so much to Westport. He was such an interesting person. And you have these gorgeous records. Nobody ever had records of a doctor like the ones you found here.
And they're fascinating to read. Eli Handy was the first. And he was 1764, and he died in 1812. And he was only 48 years old when he died.
He must have worked hard.
And It starts with his records. I have some of his records that date back to 1791.
Mm.
And then James Harvey was his son, who was also a doctor. And he died in 1868 at the age of 74. And I have his records also.
Do you know anything about how in those days doctors were trained? Where was Eli trained? Do you know how he got his training?
I don't have any records of Eli's, but Eli taught his son. He just rode along with him, and I suppose the same thing happened to Eli through somebody else.
He rode with somebody else.
But I definitely know that James Harvey learned with his father.
So it was not going to medical school, but learned by practicing experience.
Yes. And yet I have some interesting letters that students in Pittsfield, Massachusetts wrote Dr. James Harvey Handy, mm-hmm. asking him advice when they were at medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So he evidently was well known for his knowledge.
Isn't
for
that
students
marvelous?
To write him,
yes.
Questioning what they were learning at school.
Isn't that wonderful?
But anyway, the records that you speak of, dating back to 1791, the confinement cases, there were a few listed at $2, and I wondered if something happened to the baby, why they were just two,
mm-hmm.
but because all the rest of them were three.
In other words, a delivery was $3.
$3. Mm-hmm. Some exceptions, there were two.
Mm-hmm.
And a broken leg was $2, and he pulled out a tooth for 18 cents. And his house calls were usually around 50 cents, and they were, or even less. But after, in his books, he put over the river. That meant that he had to take the ferry,
mm-hmm.
or pay toll on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a little extra.
Mm-hmm. You think he went over some places I've read that doctors came over from Tiverton even to doctor people here. Do you suppose he went west as well
yes.
as east?
Yes.
He went over as
yes.
far as Tiverton?
Because some of the names he would say, they were in surrounding towns.
In Little Compton yep. and Tiverton and so
and
on.
And then some people would say that they'd see the doctor gathering his herbs in the field to replenish them. And I have some of his books, you know, telling what he used the herbs for.
Oh, yes. Do you know what some of the herbs were? Were some of the things the same things you have now?
I think they'd be the same as
you have now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once you gave me a list, I think I have it in my study of medicines of the plants that you have found since you've been here, the herbs. There, it's quite a long
like
list.
We know the digitalis and some of the
mm-hmm,
things like that.
Mm-hmm. In the little glance I had at his records, I noticed that digitalis was one of his most frequent prescriptions, and he would probably gather his own foxglove to make the digitalis himself. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. It's so creative somehow.
And a lot of people are interested. Well, the handwriting is in such a, you could tell some of the things that he used, but most of them you can't understand what medicines he
mm-hmm.
used. But you did see
it. It's such a beautiful script to look at, though, isn't
yes.
it?
And it's interesting, you could tell when Paul Cuffey was going to die. He took care of him, but he went almost every day to
mm-hmm.
the inn.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1817.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are interested in that.
Yes,
record.
That's.
And his first book, I was so interested because he came from Rochester.
Rochester, New York? Or Rochester, Massachusetts?
It just says Rochester. I imagine Rochester, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
And because his first account book, he put after the name son of so-and-so. He'd indicate so that he would remember who his patients. And his second book, he didn't do that. So evidently he was well acquainted and knew who belonged to who. But that's a great help for anybody who's interested in the
yes.
history of the families
it
here.
Is.
To know
who
he's referring to.
Was related
to
whom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's marvelous. And you have, well, you've done more study of Westport family history, I think, than anyone here. I mean, anyone who wants to know anything about a family or a person comes to Eleanor Tripp.
Well, I wish that I could remember a lot of these things, but I can't be not being a native, because you refer to different people, and I get lost quite quickly because I don't.
I get lost quicker than you do. You talk a little bit, 5 minutes or something, and I'm completely at sea. I remember when I used to get a headache all the time when we were talking. It was because I couldn't keep up with your thinking. Well, how long did they? How what did they ride in when they went around making their calls?
Well. They used to go on horseback until he was older, and then he had to have a little carriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a picture of him sitting in his little two-seater.
Isn't that darling?
Yes.
Hmm. And James Harvey?
James Harvey. Yes, that's the main one that I've seen in his little...
How long did he live?
James Harvey lived... until 1868, he was 74 years old
mm-hmm.
when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Civil War time.
He married into the Brownell family,
mm-hmm.
and they are the Brownells that live at Oscar Palmer's, and that's where they're buried.
Oh.
The two doctors are the beautiful slate stones.
Oh, they are?
The cemetery.
Both of them over at Oscar
Palmer's?
Both
over there,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Eli married Mary Brownell.
I just to pause, in case you don't, because Oscar Palmer died recently. Oscar Palmer lived on Adamsville Road, just west of our Central Village post office, really, almost the first house to the west. And right in the center of town. And he lived in a house which was almost a twin of ours, just a tiny little New England cottage. This is a grand house that we're in here now with beautiful family. And
thinking
beautiful.
Of dates, it's 40 years this year that we have owned this house.
Really? That's amazing. That's simply marvelous.
Just when I was going over the dates, figuring out the different things
mm-hmm.
for this interview, I thought, well, I wonder how long it's been, and it was exactly
40 years. Well, that
is
marvelous. Very joyous.
And it's been such fun, such a joy.
Now, what did you started, after you took off the wallpaper, and that was before you moved up here permanently. When you did move up here permanently, you had an awful lot of things you needed to do, and you did them together. What were some of them?
One of the main things was there was a pipe, a water pipe, because the water system was over on the east end. And of course, the first thing we had to do was to put heat in. There was on this end, the west end, was a one pipe furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great big register in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the heat would just pour upstairs
mm-hmm.
in the hallway. So if you were going to dress, it was a good idea to stand in the hall where the heat would be. But anyway, the water system was over on the other side, and so Abbott Smith had a pipe in our beautiful north room that ran along the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And condensation would form on the pipe. It would be dripping constantly. And so, we had to want the water over here anyway.
Yeah.
And so Lewis was being an engineer, was doing all these projects himself, and he was pushing a pipe from the east over to the west side through the area that had no cellar,
mm-hmm.
which was most of the house.
Just a crawl space, isn't that
just
what they call it?
It was just a little hole in either
mm-hmm.
end of the house,
mm-hmm.
so it's mostly crawl space. So he had the end of this pipe plugged so he wouldn't fill it full of dirt. And there were all sorts of animals that lived under the house and stones and everything else. But he worked for days and days. And when he thought he was getting somewhere near this end, I was on my stomach in the backyard watching to see if I could see the end of the pipe coming. And fine, it came through. We really celebrated.
It must have been a great moment.
Great moment. So yeah. Then we put in a hand pump in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And had our water that way for
you dope. Put in, there hadn't been a sink in the kitchen. You put in the sink?
There was a sink.
Oh, there was
there.
A sink. Was
yeah,
it a dry sink or what they called a dry sink?
It was very old mm-hmm. and everything wooden? Had to be changed. No, it was a slate. No, it
was
wasn't.
Was it covered with galvanized?
It was a great big long regular sink like today, the white.
White enamel. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Our sink so in our house was, I think, wooden, covered with a sort of galvanized iron, I guess it must have been, nailed down. And we didn't have any porcelain sink. I suppose only rich people had porcelain sinks at that time.
Of course, all the plumbing and the papering and the patching of cracks and wiring.
Yes, what about wiring?
There was no lights in most of the house, and some of it, what was done was very poor. So all that had to be done and put in BX so that it wouldn't have any mice or
mm-hmm.
chewing.
So it wouldn't be dangerous.
That, so mm-hmm. it would be dangerous.
And Lewis did that? You
yes,
helped him?
With the help. When we lived in Washington, Lewis wrote Lewis King,
mm-hmm.
who taught that in the vocational school
mm-hmm.
in New Bedford. And so...
Is he the same Lewis King who was president of the
yes.
Historical Society?
And so he wrote Lewis that he would help him if he would let him go fishing anytime he wanted, and if Lewis would help him doing the job. So the two of them worked together.
That makes me want to pause just a moment and talk about the land you own. I mean, because you do own down to the East River. And how far north does your property go?
It goes a quarter of a mile.
Quarter of a mile north.
And
it goes over to the river.
West.
And a quarter of a mile west.
Yes. And then we have Lewis bought the river lot in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the river lot because he just could visualize a hot dog stand on that
yes.
corner.
How many acres do you think you have altogether?
About 37.
How close does the dump come to your property?
Well, it's at the end of the property, quarter of a mile.
It joins the dump?
It joins.
That's not very happy making, is it?
Yeah.
That's something you might change. We were talking a minute ago about changes we might make if we could do anything we wanted to. Well,
that would be a wonderful one.
Yes. I don't think that's a very good place for the dump myself.
Yeah. Because there's two brooks in my land. One is really runoff from the marsh. Marvelous marsh right below the dump.
Mm-hmm.
Just full of
and that flows into the river and all.
And so really the dump shouldn't be there.
No.
And then there's another big brook
mm-hmm.
over further.
Mm-hmm. And everything that does, I mean, that all the pollution that comes from the dump flows into these rivers, goes into these rivers in a rain or at any time, and then the rivers go directly into the East Branch of the Westport River. So that's what's helping to pollute it, although apparently it is at this moment the cleanest river and the least polluted river in Massachusetts, in spite of the dump.
Then when we were talking about doing things here, restoring after we moved. Well, before we moved up, Lewis gave a long list to Mike Coughlin to have done by Elliot or Mr. Tabor.
Ken Tabor. Uh-huh.
And his boys. Shingling the parts that needed shingling around the house and a whole list of stairs to go down the cellar. There were
mm-hmm.
the old stone steps that were, you just couldn't get up and down. That's where the furnace was going to
yeah.
be. Well, one of the main things was Lewis was going to replace the front doors.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the porch had been taken off, but the doors had been, the original doors had been cut off.
Mm-hmm.
to put this porch mm-hmm. up. And so they had a negative in the old diagram of a picture of the front doors, the original doors, and they had a print made and sent it to Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
So he copied them. And a lot of it had to be done with a magnifying glass to count all the dentals, so
yes.
the exact number that were in the original doors. And then he built the doors and sent them up
mm-hmm.
in pieces, not the main door itself, because we bought that after it, but the frame, the important part. And then Mr. Tabor and his boys tore down the other doors and put up what are copies of the original, and they're just beautiful.
They're simply beautiful. Well, this property is, I mean, such a landmark for New England. There's nothing any more treasured, I think, in any place near Boston or anywhere else than this house is. The cupboards, well, tell about how beautiful the cupboards are.
Yes.
Can you?
I think the prettiest one is in that south middle room.
I do too.
And that has such beautiful dentals around it too.
Yeah. Now that was built by, this is built by...
As I mentioned, Henry Worth has written these articles up, and even one of his articles will give us one date and one person building it, and another article will give a different date and would say the Handys built it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know, because as far as I imagine, it might have been Humphrey White who built that middle portion.